Jack and Jill here.
Hello.
Welcome to the Jack Jill Show, entertaining real estate investment talk. I'm Jack Pusella.
And I am Jill DeWitt, broadcasting from sunny, soon-to-be rainy Southern California.
Today, Jill and I talk about leasing or buying your primary residence. Seems like a simple thing, but it really can trip you up.
Oh, my goodness.
At any point in your life.
It could sink the ship for some people.
Have you heard of this term, house poor?
Yeah.
I've known people that are just house poor. Like, they purchased such an expensive house that they don't have any money left for anything else.
I know.
Including real estate investment.
And where do they get that advice? Where does that...
I know people, too,
that they think that they've... For some reason in their heads, they have it to sink every last dollar into it because, oh, it's going to pay off someday.
Right. Or it's, like, the best investment. Well, we'll talk all about it. Before we get into it, let's take a question. Posted by one of our members on the jackjill.com online community. It's free.
Okay. Shay asks, I haven't done my first deal yet, so I apologize if my question seems naive. I got a call regarding a property that is in rural desert area. The lot in question is 3 acres and sits catty corner to a lot about the same size that is occupied. Like many people who actually make their home this far out from town, satellite images show that they have made full use of their property and have various outbuildings, derbies, I don't know what, a couple of broken down cars, and overall looks somewhat junky.
Boy, that's a really nice way to put that. Congratulations, Shay.
Right.
There's a bunch of stuff everywhere.
Right. Well, I've seen worse. I'm concerned about its proximity to the property that I'm looking at making it unsellable. On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being tidy and 10 being a rotting junk heap.
1 being Jill.
What?
10 being me.
No. I'd call this one a strong 7. I guess what I'm asking is when you guys are faced with this situation, how do you approach it? What kinds of things do you look for? What would kill the deal? How do you address the issue with the seller if you already have a signed offer? I know every case is different, and I'm actually buying this property at a discount, but I'm obviously concerned about my ability to resell it. Even at a discount, do people still have properties next to junky neighbors, or am I just opening myself up to a headache? Thanks in advance. This is a common, very good question.
It's a great new person question, and I have a ton to say about it, but I'm going to let you go first.
Oh, I was going to let you go first.
Oh, okay. This is an attribute, not a problem. The only reason that you wouldn't buy property, let me put it this way. When you're buying rural vacant property, the more things that make it unique or the more things that make it potentially livable, the better off you are. And in this case, this guy may have, the neighbor may have taken a junky approach to this, but they figured out how to live there. They figured out what to do with electricity and power and sewer and water. So that, I look at it like that person's done a lot of the work, albeit maybe not how we would go about it. They've done it. So that alone, because the person who's going to buy this property is probably taking the same approach to life. If you're going to sell it to a non-investor, you're going to sell it to the end user. They might have a bunch of crap that they want to put all over their property, just like this guy.
Yeah, who's to say it's going to be a little house on the prairie,
right.
Gorgeous little cabin? We don't know what they're going to do with it. You know, I was going to say, too, what about you, if you thought about this, Jack, but 3 acres is bigger than you think it is.
Yeah.
You know, that's
3 acres is 130,000 square feet.
Mm-hmm. It's
your house that you live in is probably about 1,200.
Right.
So, go ahead.
No, that was it.
It's a lot of square footage, and then access. So, this person also figured out how to get to the property somebody's living there. So, there's two types of rural real estate: ones that you can get to and ones that you can't. Think of just a picture, a square, of a piece of property in the middle of the desert, which we often come up with. We often get signed purchase agreements back on. You know, that's not as desirable as this. So, in a nutshell, the shorter answer is, I would buy it.
Yeah, and you know what? He just said it's at a discount, it's a good price. So, you know, I wouldn't have a problem with it. Now, one more thing, though. If for some reason, Shay, this is just not sitting right with you, don't do it. And how do you get out of it? You just tell the seller that, you know what? I did my research and it actually, you know, it doesn't meet my criteria. And thank you very much. I mean, let me tell you, deals fall through all the time. And I'm talking, let me share one.
I hope it's probably the same one I'm thinking about.
I can say that even investors that go through the whole process of doing formal, you know, through a realtor, offer, you know what I mean? You know, all signed, all everything through there, and you're open to escrow, like it was all that legal and legit, they could still change their mind and go, you know what, never mind, we don't want to do this, and walk.
Right.
So I'm not, I don't like that because I hate it when that happens to me, but.
It just happened.
Right. So try to, here's my thing, do the right thing and do it quickly. Just say don't drag it out, and that's fine. I mean, at least this person, it was only 3 days, it could have been 5 days, 7 days, 10, we were going to close in 10 days. They could have done it the day before we were going to close, technically, you know, but so I'd say just tell the person quickly, thank you very much. I know you accepted my offer. Doesn't meet my criteria after all. I'm sorry.
Well, don't let this deal go to waste. Go on DealBoard on, is it on Land Academy or Land Investors? Go on landinvestors.com and go to the DealBoard that we've set up for members.
Somebody
if you're a member.
Somebody else might want it. It's true.
Somebody will buy this. Don't let it just, if it's out of your comfort level, then,
pass it.
Right. And cool. Then one more notable point. There's a few things that if you actually visit a piece of property that you see that are a tremendous environmental concern, you need to get in your back in your car and leave.
Good point.
And it's all has to do with EPA environmental concerns. Refrigerators are a big problem. If you remember with Katrina, Hurricane Katrina, there are the Freon in older refrigerators is really toxic. It's an Environmental Protection Agency issue. And while the EPA is largely bullying group of people who are wrong 95% of the time, in my opinion, they're probably right about this Freon thing. So if you see old refrigerators all over the place and it's just leaking and you got to get out of there, anything that's a potential environmental hazard can really affect the acquisition of your property. So you want to stay away from that. But an old car sitting there, no problem.
It's true.
Just my opinion. Today's topic, lease or buy your primary residence. This is the meat of the show. Everybody gets, since we're real little children, most of their real estate training inadvertently by our parents' decisions on what they do with their primary residence, with their house. Houses are so important. Everybody needs a place to live. So this can be really good or not so good. For instance, my parents purchased the primary residence or residences that I lived in, and they did okay. They purchased them, they resold them. Jill's parents did incredibly well for most of her early childhood renting.
Yeah.
And then made several good real estate deals, I guess, when you were probably out of the house.
First house they bought was when I was 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And they bought it from a bank. And my mom went to real estate school so she could find the asset and buy it herself without the commission stuff. That was the best they knew how to do it back then.
So what do you think about that? How do you think that affected like the rest of your real estate career watching that?
Yeah, I think it did too. Because the rate was so great where we were. You know, this is my first point on this whole topic is where are you in your life? And you know what? Where am I? And I didn't even think about my parents. So thank you for asking. Where my parents were in life was young kids, didn't have a lot of money, you know, whatever, saving was hard to do. You know, my dad was, different jobs, not, just trying to get going and building up with, get on with a good airline back then took a lot of time. So, and it was expensive. So they found a very nice house in a very nice neighborhood in Orange County, California. And rented till I was 18 years old. And then they had a chunk of cash. Dad had got, and then too, I remember they did it right. They, as far as I'm concerned, they saved up a bunch chunk of cash so they could buy the right house and they did it. And then that set them up.
This is the absolute right way to do this, by the way.
And then from there, they went from, selling that house that was in Laguna Hills to buying a big house in Grapevine, Texas, and that set them up. I mean, they just kept getting better and better and better.
Sure.
So, and then
they had the time and the resources and the maturity to make good decisions.
Well, then, and after that one transaction, I think is when my dad figured out, wait a minute, you don't have to be an agent to do this. So they started buying and selling properties. Remember, my dad had his own, he had like 10 or so properties in the Texas area that he bought himself and he was his own landlord and renting them out, and did it all on his own. So it was good. So it really set the tone and I think they did it right.
I'm a huge fan of renting your primary residence for a bunch of reasons. I think the old school model that at least people our age are used to is people from the 50s and 60s and 70s buying property for way, way less money than it's worth. Where Jill and I live right now, a property could be purchased for $60,000 or $70,000 and it's worth $4 or $5 million now.
I know.
Those are commercial real estate margins.
It's crazy.
So that's, you know, that's fantastic. That's great. But people, statistics show people just don't hold on to properties for 30 years anymore.
Right.
Or even 15.
Right.
There's a lot of moving around. Most of it's because of job mobility. So the way to make money in real estate is not by paying a mortgage over 30 years anymore. While that was very viable at one point, and still could be viable today if you just know you're going to live there for 30 years, I think it's better to buy property cheaper right up front so that, that you are purchasing an equity position, a positive equity position right out of the box.
So you're saying, wait, this is my thing, wait, save up your money, pay cash for it.
Yeah.
At the right price.
Not cash, but, well, you know, don't put 3% or 5% down on a property that, right, where you just, you're buying it retail out of the MLS with a real estate agent that's already been all cleaned up.
Right.
That's one of my points. My big point is, if you're part of this group, you already know how to make a tremendous amount of money in real estate. You're already doing it on every single deal. Right. Or at least if you're starting out, you're learning how to do it. So you don't need, here's the real problem with buying a primary residence. What's the first thing that everybody does? Oh, let's paint it. Let's move this mall around. Let's nest. And all it is a massive distraction in what you, I think you should really be doing in life. Whatever that is, I don't know. you probably disagree. There's something you,
Jack.
I am sure you, listener, are better than that. You are better than just moving walls around.
Massive distraction. Oh my God! I know that's how you rank children. Now you primary residence, wife, and children. Massive distraction.
You know what?
Hold on a moment.
Not you.
Oh,
but
thanks.
Yeah, you're right about the kids.
I know. I know. Oh my gosh. What do you think about, okay, I have a question. We're just going to let that go. What do you think about leasing or buying based on the market?
If you're in a real down market, like we were in 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, mm-hmm. and you're staring at a property that, and you have a good job and it didn't really affect you.
You have cash in the bank.
And you have some money, a rational amount of money to put down, let's say 20 or 30%, then I think you should maybe think about it, but then ultimately probably not pull a trigger if you're young. It's just a distraction, Joe. It stops you from making the decisions that you should be making, even at our age. Like, what if there was a fantastic
job opportunity
in France?
So you rent it out. You don't like that?
No.
Oh. Well, I'm a fan. So here's my
thing.
Here's
what I love to do.
I think
buy a house,
all right,
and sell it for 40 or 50 or 80 or $100,000 more. In some cases, a lot more immediately because that's the business that we're in.
Well, that's true. But let's just say you build up. Let's talk about this then. What about the difference in your bank balance? Okay. The first scenario is you're young, you're starting out, you don't have a big bank balance. So, man, rent forever. There's nothing wrong with that. Build up your balance. Now, say you've been doing this, now I have $300,000 in my bank balance, Jack. Now, what different decisions would you tell me to make?
Is it better to spend 300, let's say 200, you have 300 grand, you spend mm-hmm. $200,000 on a house.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have 100,000 left.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm going to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
Or should I take $200,000, buy a house, resell it for 300. Now I have that 300. I still have the 100. And then on and on and on. Is that use of that $200,000 better if you're a proficient investor? Or should you spend
it
on a house?
No, I'm saying you're not an investor. I'm saying somebody who's not an investor. Like just somebody, what if I'm a doctor and I'm very happy being a doctor
mm-hmm.
and I've actually been saving my money? I'm just asking this question because
I mean, doctors.
Well, I know. Let's not go there. Maybe that was a bad example.
If you're an engineer.
You're a fisherman. Auto mechanic.
Yeah.
How about your awesome auto mechanic?
Auto mechanic marries a teacher.
Perfect.
I think that's a great example.
And they don't have kids.
They don't have kids.
And they've worked very hard. They are 30 now,
mm-hmm.
and they have $200,000 in the bank because they worked hard. And that's okay. Would you tell them to go spend $150,000 on a house
yeah.
and pay cash for it?
Pay cash. Yes,
and then,
I would.
And then have, that's where I was going with that because I thought that's how you felt. And I do too.
You should have been a lawyer.
Why?
You just got me to say yes.
Oh, it's not hard. Oh my gosh.
It didn't take long either.
Yeah, no.
It really took about 8 minutes for you, Joe.
Watch me. I can get my way. Watch this. Just
unthink
kidding.
My whole concept on this.
Sorry. No, because I want.
All kidding aside, what Jill's saying is it's circumstantial.
Yeah.
This one way is not right for everybody, but the show is for theoretically people who are interested in buying and selling real estate.
Theoretically.
So.
But there might be other people listening to us. Maybe three.
Not anymore. I just heard their buttons all click off.
No. Okay. But, you know, overall, though, my number, if you came to me right now and said, quick, answer this question, lease or buy, you know what I'd say?
Lease.
Yep.
So too. Would I.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So would I. And it's not, if you just look at the money piece, here's another point. When you go to buy a house and you do it the traditional way, a primary residence, and you do it through the MLS and there's agents and lenders involved, you're spending tens of thousands of dollars, if not $100,000 on fees and furniture and upfront costs, because you don't buy a house because you're downgrading. You buy a house because you're aspiring to buy a property in a neighborhood that you potentially can't afford, probably because your friends did it or some awful reason. And so you're spending, I see people deplete their cash. That's what bothers me the most about it. Then that save up example, you've got a bunch of money saved up, just leave it alone. Or really invest it wisely in something that you're taking all the risk out of it because you've studied it. And that's how you get ahead in life.
Mm-hmm.
Your primary residence doesn't matter. It's just an ego thing.
Remember last night we went to an event where they talked about the upswings and downswings, the boom and the crashes of the real estate market and what that person's predictions were. Would you suggest people to start building up a little cash thing and sit in tight for 3 years and watch what happens so they could acquire?
There's money to be made in a high market and in a low market. Mm-hmm. So no, I don't think sitting tight and watching TV is ever wise.
You know what? Okay.
Does that answer it?
What did you say?
I don't think sitting tight,
watching TV.
I don't think sitting tight and just riding it out and watching TV for a few years is ever the right answer.
Okay.
But I think there's always a reason to have more cash than less.
You know, the day trader in you just came out. Flip it. Buy it. Flip it. Quick. Get out. Same day.
Yeah.
I know. I'm joking.
That's not.
It's all.
I have no day trader mentality.
No.
For the record. That was Jill's attempt at a joke.
It was. I'm sorry. But, you know, I do agree, though. You said there's money to be made when it's going up, and there's money to be made when it's going down. And it's true. And, like, because we're proving that right now over and over again as we're working on House Academy. You know, buy it, don't keep it that long, and sell it. You know, there's a lot of people that think that's, you know what, I think for me, that's the main thing here, Jack. I think a lot of people think that you should buy these properties and plan on 20 years and it will pan out.
Boy, I'll tell you, there's dwindling number of markets where that's going to happen.
That's what I'm saying. But I think the mentality out there, because we watched our parents do it.
Yep.
That's, I think, a lot of our parents bought a $30,000 Hallcraft house in 1970 or 80 or who knows what, right? And they at least doubled their money in a lot of places, you know? And so I think that's what a lot of people are going, well, I'm going to do that too.
In a couple of days, we have a show called Why the Same House. So if you picture that Hallcraft that Jill just said, why that house in Texas is $110,000 and why in California it's $3.2 million.
Right.
The exact same house in the same condition. And here's a hint. It has nothing to do with the real estate itself or the land or any of these economic theories that you have. It has everything to do with, here's a spoiler, how much money people have in that area.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So Jill's example of this, the old school model that it will go up, is just not the case. I have too many examples, starting with my father's last primary residence, that where he purchased it for $700,000 or $800,000 right on the water in Michigan, lived there for 15 or 20 years and purchased for the same price. I mean, sold it for the same price. And so he in effect rented that house.
Right.
So from himself. But here's the bad news. You know, every time the roof started to leak or any kind of maintenance had to go on, you had to come out of pocket for it instead of paying rent.
Right.
Setting the pain, asking the landlord to fix it.
It's true.
So, you know, there's a lot of ways to cut it, and a lot of them are real estate specific. I mean, in that case, he could have avoided that if you have purchased it, you know, in a non-traditional way, the way that we purchase real estate, right, for $300,000 or $400,000, which is what he should have purchased it for.
It's true. That's very, very true. You're right.
So leasing is not as evil as a tenant. It's not as evil as we all think. Mm-hmm. Being a landlord is not always the best answer for your primary residence. Being a landlord and owning tons of property and renting them out, now that's a good idea.
Can I add one more thing?
Not being satirical, of course.
Can I add one more thing that I find really interesting too? It's interesting in some markets how what you can lease a house for and what your mortgage payment would be are so different.
Yeah.
So if you really sit and do the math, like, I'll tell you, Southern California is that way. You buy a $2 million house, your mortgage is what?
Well, with taxes and everything, it's generally $5,000 for every million,
okay,
a month.
So you're paying $10,000,
yeah,
a month mortgage, right? But
principal interest and then some other stuff, but the taxes are atrocious.
Mm-hmm.
The taxes here are atrocious.
Right, so that's what your mortgage would be if you don't put much down and all that good stuff. But those same homes will lease for half that.
Or less, right? Mm-hmm. That's a great point, so... You just have to really look at the deal and really sit yourself down and your spouse down and say, is this really what we want?
Exactly. That's true.
Is it worth it?
And where are we in our life?
Mm-hmm. And where are we going?
Right.
Well, you've done it again. You spent another 20 minutes with us listening to the Jack and Jill Show. Join us tomorrow where we discuss how to find a money partner.
Oh, and we answer your question. Should you have one, post it on jackjill.com, our online community. Go there. It's free.
You are not alone in your real estate ambition. It's a complicated topic that we just talked about. And everybody's really, I'm sure that half the listeners are saying, you guys are off your rocker. You have to buy a house.
Yeah, look at how much we made.
The other half are saying, I'm really happy. I've rented my whole life.
I know. It's a
tough
one.
I bet, depending on their age, they have a lot of different, a very different opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, even cars, leasing and buying cars, you know, it's that too. You know, it used to be, have you noticed a shift? It's almost like I don't see as many people are here. Maybe I just don't hear it about car leases as much as buying. But I don't know. Everybody has a different opinion on it. And those depreciate so fast. You know, I'm such a fan of just buying a used car, obviously.
Yeah, for cash, me too.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a corporation and you have a fleet, then you should always lease them. I mean, there's tax reasons, and that's very complicated.
Oh, that's true,
yeah,
too.
There's big tax issues.
Well, you know what? Okay, that brings up one thing that we didn't talk about, too. And I'm going to ask this last question. I know people that buy homes, even if they have the money in the bank, they will buy a house because they think that it's better to write off the interest,
yeah,
not pay the whole thing, but buy only up to a certain percentage and make the payments on it because they could write off the interest.
Yeah.
And I can't wrap my head around.
That's a result of a government ad campaign conspiracy quite some time ago.
Okay.
Just like milk is good for you.
Got it. Thank you very much. Hey.
She ended it right there.
I did. Share the fun by subscribing on iTunes or wherever you're listening. And while you're at it, please rate us there.
We are Jack and Jill. Information
and inspiration
to buy undervalued property.